Our sermon this morning is based on Luke chapter 8, starting at the 40th verse. Now when Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him because they were all waiting for him. Then a man named Jairus, who was the leader of the synagogue, came up. Falling at Jesus' feet, he pleaded with him to come to his house because he had only one daughter, and she was about 12 years old, and she was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds pressed around him. Now, there was a woman there who had been suffering from a hemorrhage for 12 years, but couldn't be healed by anyone. She came up behind Jesus and touched the edge of his cloak, and at once her bleeding stopped. But then Jesus asked, "Who is it that touched me?" When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the crowds are surrounding you and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me, for I know that power has gone out from me." When the woman saw she could not escape notice, she came trembling and fell down before him. In the presence of all the people, she explained why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." While he was still speaking, someone from the synagogue leader's house came and said, "Your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher any longer." But when Jesus heard this, he told them, "Don't be afraid. Just believe and she will be healed." Now when he came to the house, Jesus did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. They were all wailing and mourning for her, but he said, "Stop your weeping. She's not dead, but asleep." And they laughed him to scorn because they knew that she was dead. But Jesus gently took her by the hand and said, "Child, get up." Her spirit returned and she got up immediately. Then he told them to give her something to eat. Her parents were astonished, but he ordered them to tell no one what had happened. Today we have two stories, or rather a story within a story, both demonstrating the love and compassion of Jesus, as well as his authority over life and death. The lesson opens and closes with an appeal from a loving father who only wants to see his daughter healed. She's in desperate need. According to her father, she is in the process of dying. So anything that delays Jesus could prove disastrous. We are told that the man's name is Jairus. He's a leader of the synagogue. That probably means he was an elder or maybe a cantor, but not a rabbi. Just someone who leads in the worship that takes place at the synagogue. But he doesn't mention that. Luke does. He does not use his position to try to gain extra favors from Jesus. He doesn't say, "You really should do this for me because I'm instrumental in the worship of this community." He simply presents his case before Jesus. "My daughter, my only daughter, is dying." He knows that if Jesus doesn't heal her, she will die. He also knows if he doesn't do it quickly, she will die. So, of course, Jesus agrees to go with him. We don't even need to be told that. It's simply as Jesus was on his way. But Jairus' daughter is in trouble right from the start. The crowd that had gathered around Jesus decides to go with him, no doubt slowing both Jesus and the desperate father. But then another situation intervenes. An anonymous woman. We are told Jairus' name, but this woman remains nameless. She's been suffering from bleeding for as long as Jairus' daughter has been alive. She comes up to Jesus, Mark adds in his version, and some versions in Luke also include this verse. She had endured a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all that she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. A little dig at the author, Luke, who happens to be a physician. We are also told in Matthew and Mark that when she heard of Jesus, she came in the press behind him, thinking to herself, "If I could just touch his clothes, it will be enough. I'll be made whole." But there's a problem. Because of her condition, she has been in a state of uncleanness for 12 years. And according to the law, she was in the same condition as a leper, unable to worship with her community of faith, and needing to keep to herself lest she give any of her uncleanness to someone else. Now, we're not told that she was concerned about being healed simply because she missed worshiping in the synagogue or going to the temple. But it was a part of her situation. And it's important for us to recognize that as far as the gospel writers are concerned, her condition and the resulting uncleanness were not her fault. It was simply a condition that she found herself in. But even so, what she knew she needed to do, touch the corner of Jesus' garment, would itself be a violation of the law, because it carried the risk of her making him unclean. But instead of her uncleanness contaminating Jesus, his holiness, his virtue, as one of the gospel writers puts it, cleansed her. We're told that she touched the hem or the corner of Jesus' cloak. This would be the blue tassels that an observant Jew at that time would wear on the corners of his clothing as a reminder of the requirements of the law and as a way of stating his devotion to the law and his desire to keep it. In the book of Numbers, we're given this instruction. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the Israelites and tell them to make tassels for themselves on the corners of their garments throughout their generations, and to put a blue thread in the tassel of the corners. You must have this tassel so that you may look at it and remember all the commandments of the Lord and obey them, so that you do not follow after your own heart and your own eyes that will lead you to unfaithfulness. So you will remember and obey all my commandments and be holy to your God." The very symbol of Jesus' holiness, which her condition would be guilty of polluting. This may explain why we are told that when Jesus insisted on knowing who was healed by touching him, that she was afraid. It may also explain why she crept up through the press, thinking, "If I can only touch him." But now, her act has been discovered. And yet, this is faith. Doing what simply has to be done. Trusting in God's power, but also in his compassion. And she is healed. Just as she thought, if I could only touch, I would be healed. And she was. If only Jesus had let it go at that. He's in a hurry. He's going to the home of a 12-year-old girl who's dying. And yet he stops and he looks around and he says, "Who touched me?" Why did Jesus do that? Why couldn't he simply let her be healed and keep her anonymous? Did he desire to make a spectacle of her? That's not the kind of character that we expect from Jesus. No. He refused to let it go unnoticed because he knew that here was a lesson in faith. And by drawing attention to it, he elevated her act of faith. And in so doing, he highlighted the mercy and grace of God. Your faith has saved you. Go in peace. And at just that moment, the bad news arrives. While he was still speaking, someone from the synagogue leader's house came and said, "Your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher any longer." What was going through Jairus' mind at that point? Was he thinking, if only we hadn't been delayed? Was he thinking, "Oh, curse that woman for interrupting Jesus and keeping him from saving my daughter"? We don't know. We're not told. It doesn't matter. Because they no sooner tell him not to trouble the teacher any longer than Jesus looks at him and he says, "Don't be afraid. Trust me. She'll be healed." And he trusted. Beyond fear, beyond doubt, beyond grief, beyond the impossible, he trusted. That too is faith. But let's look just a little deeper into this story. For the power of the gospel is found not only in the miracles that this passage relates, but also in the way the story is told. We need to learn how to be storytellers and story hearers. Now, when Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him because they were waiting for him. Jesus returned from what? We are told in the preceding passage that Jesus and his disciples had crossed over the lake, and as soon as they got out of the boat in the region of the Gadarenes, a man met them. He has just returned from meeting the man with the demons, as if it was a meeting, as if it was an appointment on his book. It seems to be the only reason he crossed the lake. To see this man, to heal him, and to head back. And now that he's back, he has another appointment to keep. A man named Jairus, who was leader of the synagogue, came up. Falling at Jesus' feet, he pleaded with him to come to his house. He pleaded with him to come to his house. I want you to notice the intensity of some of the words that Luke uses in this account. He pleaded with Jesus to come to his house because he had an only daughter, about 12 years old, and she was in the process of dying. Notice, Luke gives the age of the girl. He doesn't simply say, a little girl, or Jairus said, my daughter, which Jairus never said how old she was. Jairus said, my only daughter is sick and dying. Many healings in the Gospels, but I don't recall any other healing in which the age of the person who is healed is given. It's a good thing she was only 12. As she was 35, maybe she wouldn't have wanted it given. I don't know. So Jesus is told, my daughter is in the process of dying. Death was imminent. Time was of the essence. So as Jesus was on his way with Jairus, the crowds pressed around him. Notice the crowds pressed around Jesus. The word pressed that Luke uses here means to crowd in from all sides, to choke. It's the same word that Luke uses when he tells us the parable of the sower, and he says there were seed thrown among the thorns, and when the seed started to come up, the thorns choked the seed and kept it from growing. Now, a woman was there who had been suffering. I almost can't bear the amount of suffering in this passage. A man desperate to have his only daughter healed before she dies. A woman who has been suffering from a hemorrhage for 12 years. 12 years. Where did I hear that before? 12 years. Oh, that's how old the girl is. 12 years old. Interesting. The girl is 12. The woman had suffered uncleanness and pain for 12 years. Is there a connection there? We're not told. It's like John in Revelation. I heard what the seven thunders said, and I was going to write it down, and the angel said, don't write that down. And I say, John, why'd you have to tell me that the thunders said anything if you're not going to tell me what they said? And here, so unusual for the gospel writers to give the age of a person who is in need and the length of time that a person has suffered. We hear in the Gospel of John about a man who'd suffered most of his life and was laying at the temple begging for money, but we're not told how many years he was there. Here we're told how old the girl is and how many years this woman suffered. It's the same length of time. Interesting. No detail is insignificant when God gives it to us. But at the same time, it's not for us to make up meaning. She came up behind Jesus and touched the edge of his cloak, and at once the bleeding stopped. She reaches to touch Jesus' tassels, perhaps hoping that with the crowd pressing, he wouldn't notice. He wouldn't feel her touch any differently than anyone else's touch. She wouldn't need to ask for help, and in so doing, expose her need. And then Jesus says, who is it that touched me? And I can just picture her creeping back into the crowd, hoping to disappear. Jesus knows that healing power has gone out from him. Notice he says that in one of the Gospels. He says, I know that virtue, that healing has flowed from me to someone. All these people pressing against him, only one person receiving from him power. Why? Why of all those people was there only one person who received from Jesus power? We'll find out. But in the meantime, I think it's significant that the gospel writers don't say, when Peter complains, he doesn't say, I suddenly felt unclean. No. He's not talking about what he took in at her touch. He's talking about what left him at her touch. And what left him was healing. When all the crowd denied it, deliberately touching him, as opposed to just jostling him, Peter said, Master, the crowds are pressing against you. This time, the word pressing is a different word. It's a word that means stomping. Like, it's the same word they use when they talk about pressing the grapes to get juice for wine. But Jesus said, no. I didn't say someone bumped against me. I didn't say someone pushed me. I didn't say someone jostled me. I said someone deliberately touched me because I know that power has gone out from me. When the woman saw she couldn't escape, notice she came trembling and fell down before him. And in the presence of all the people, oh, how embarrassing. She explained why she had dared to touch him. I added that, dared. Why she had touched him. And how she had immediately been healed. What must have gone through the woman's mind as Jesus searches the crowd for her? Was she afraid that if he heard her story and knew that she had stolen healing power from him, that he would claim it back again and she would be back in her old condition again? Would he condemn her for polluting his purity? There are people who do that. I'm sure there were others in her own history in the past 12 years who had done that, to whom she was nothing but an unclean person. Would he demand his power back and take away her healing? Then he said to her daughter, "Your faith has made you well. Go in peace." Jesus simply listens. And then he says to her, no need to fear. Your faith made possible this healing. My power did it. My holiness did it. But your faith gave you an access to that power and holiness that no one else in this whole crowd that's been jostling me had. No one had that specific a need, and no one had that deliberate a faith. While he was still speaking, someone from the synagogue leader's house came and said, "Daughter, your daughter is dead. Don't trouble the teacher any longer." But when Jesus heard it, he told Jairus, "Don't be afraid, just believe, and she'll be healed." Bad news, but a word of hope. If only Jairus can quiet the urgency inside of him and continue to believe when it seems as though It's just too late. Now, when Jesus came to the house, he did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's parents. Now, they were all wailing and mourning for her. The Jews have professional mourners who come to people who are going through grief, and they mourn for them as a way of encouraging them to let out their emotions. They're wailing, and they're literally beating their breasts. To all appearances, she's dead. It's too late. There's no need to bother the teacher anymore. But Jesus said, "Oh, quit your weeping." Think he said it like that? She's not dead. She's just asleep. And they laughed him to scorn because they knew she was dead. Laughed him to scorn. That's a very graphic word. They mocked him. It's a combination of words that combine laughter and anger. They mocked him. How dare you say that when her grieving parents are right here? How dare you say she's not dead? But Jesus gently, notice that word, gently. Jesus gently took her by the hand and said, "Child, get up." The other Gospels give it in the original language, "Talitha kum." Talitha meaning little girl, kum, get up. Her spirit returned. An interesting way of putting it. Her spirit returned and she got up immediately. No mention of her being healed. I guess you don't need to be healed if you come back from the dead. And Jesus told them, "Give her something to eat." Her spirit returns, and yet Jesus does not overlook her material needs. There are so many, particularly in religious groups and churches and so forth, who think that as long as your spiritual needs are met, your material needs aren't important. Not Jesus. Give her something to eat. I have a feeling that she appreciated that. Her parents were astonished. There's another powerful word. Doesn't just say her parents were grateful. Her parents were thankful. Her parents were astonished. But Jesus, he just told them, "Don't tell anybody what happened." Don't tell anyone what happened? Everybody outside knows she was dead. She comes walking out and people are going to go, "What?" And we're not supposed to tell them what happened? Well, wait a minute. The end of last week's lesson in the Gadarenes. The man who was healed wanted to come with Jesus, and Jesus said, "No, your calling is to stay here. I want you to go back to your house, and I want you to tell everybody what God has done for you." He's supposed to tell, and they're supposed to not tell. He lives on the other side of the lake in the Greek territory, not many Jews there. He's a synagogue leader, and he's not supposed to tell? Can you imagine if he was Wally or Jim and they were doing the opening the Sunday after this took place? And we get to the praise time and they say, "Does anybody have any praises? I'd really like to say something, but I'm not allowed to." And they're like, "What?" He orders them not to tell. Why? He tells the demons who know who he is, "Don't tell anybody who I am." He tells nearly everybody he heals in Judea and Galilee, don't tell anyone. To the lepers, don't tell anyone I cleansed you. Just go to the priest and give the offering that's required of you. Why? We're not told. But I have a suspicion that the reason Jesus said that was because he didn't want people coming after him because he was a miracle worker. He wanted them to come after him to hear the truth about God and about themselves. We're told as much in the Gospel of John, chapter 6. Remember that story of the feeding of the 5,000? Then Jesus gets in a boat with his disciples. No, the disciples get in the boat and they go across the lake. Jesus goes up the mountain to pray. And then sometime during the night, he comes down the mountain and he walks across the lake to get to the other side. And the next day, the people who were fed go looking at the mountain where he went to pray because they knew that the disciples took the only boat and went across the lake. And they end up scouring the side of the lake until they catch up with him and they say, hey, you know, we've been trying to find you all morning. And all Jesus can say to them is, I tell you the solemn truth. You're looking for me not because you saw miraculous signs, because you ate all the bread you wanted. Don't work for food that disappears. Don't seek me for my miracles. But for the food that remains to eternal life, the food which the Son of Man will give you, the truth about who God is and what he requires. For God the Father has put his seal of approval on him. And sure enough, by the end of the chapter, when they weren't getting bread, but instead were getting teaching they didn't want to hear, everybody abandoned him, except for the 12. Well, I've talked long enough, and it's time to wrap things up. How do we summarize this powerful story? I hate to use that word story, this powerful account from the Gospel of Luke. It teaches us two important lessons that I can say very briefly, but I want you to remember them because they are critically important. The first lesson we learn from Jairus and his 12-year-old daughter. The lesson is, no matter how desperate the situation, no matter how little hope is left, it is never too late for God to help us if we cry out to him in faith, if we simply don't allow ourselves to give up, if we, like Jairus, when he was told his daughter was dead, dared to continue to hope simply because Jesus said, don't fear, keep believing, and your prayers will be answered. Even death could not keep Jesus from fulfilling his word. And the second lesson we learn from the woman with the flow of blood. God is never too busy to attend to our smallest needs. There was a crowd of people around Jesus. And there was a particular need he was going to address. Have you ever felt when you had a need that was a bit much for you? Well, I can't bother God with this. He's got so many people that pray to him, so many needs. Surely this is just a little thing to him. There are no little prayers. If God could care about a woman who had suffered for 12 years, If Jesus could stop everything he was doing, put the life of a 12-year-old girl at risk by stopping and asking, who needed me? Who touched me? That tells me that Jesus is never too busy to hear us and to help us. And both of these lessons are summarized perfectly by the promise that God gave to Paul, that Paul shared with the Ephesian believers, that the Ephesian believers share with us. Now to him who by the power that is working within us is able to do far beyond all that we dared to ask or think, to him be the glory in the church and in Christ Jesus to all generations, forever and ever. Amen.